This is Double Standards. I'm Yvette Rowe.
And this is Annie Paul.
This time on Double Standards, the killing of Osama bin Laden and the questions it raises. We'll be talking to Dr. Jonathan Farley. He's a professor of computer science at the University of Maine and co-editor of Mathematical Methods in Counterterrorism.
And we'll also be looking at the furor around the Gangs of Gordon House editorials of the Gleaner that we've heard a number of politicians responding to recently.
That's all coming up in Double Standards here on News Talk 93 FM.
Hi, Jonathan. Good morning. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine.
Heard you the other day on the BBC World Have Your Say program, and you were talking about, I think the whole discussion was about the death of, or the killing of Osama bin Laden, and, the many mysteries that surround that event. And you were taking a rather fierce position that Obama should have to go to The Hague and face the world tribunal.
Actually, I don't think that's a fierce position. I think it's actually quite a reasonable one, mm-hmm. and probably commonplace. I'm not saying that Obama should go to The Hague merely for the assassination of an unknown party in a sovereign country, not his own. I'm saying he should go to The Hague for the murder of Gaddafi's grandchildren, which happened a few days before that, and also for the killings of innocent civilians in Pakistan itself with his drone attacks. The New America Foundation did a study and concluded that 1 in 3 drone deaths due to the drone attacks, mm-hmm. Is a civilian. And yet, Obama continues.
Yes, and you could also have said the same about Bush and the Iraq War, which many, many people, including myself, think was completely unnecessary and involved a huge loss of lives, innocent lives.
Yes, I do say the same about the Bush administration.
Well, Dr. Farley, Yvette Rowe here, there are those who would say that's all well and good, but what about those people that died on 9/11 and those people who have died in terrorist attacks, and that they feel that they have a right to defend themselves, and defense sometimes means attack?
The people they're attacking did not attack them. So the U.S. government said at the time in September and October 2001, that they fully understood the Taliban in Afghanistan did not attack the United States. They were just going to attack them anyway if they did not hand over Osama bin Laden. And in one of the few reasonable statements made by the Taliban leadership, they said, if you show us the evidence, then we will hand Osama bin Laden over. But the United States did not provide any evidence. And in fact, one of the cleverest tricks that has been employed by the U.S. government over the last several decades is to brand anyone who questions what they do with the label conspiracy theorist, when in fact the U.S. government has engaged in a large number of conspiracies over the decades, my favorite being COINTELPRO, their decades-long operation that they directed at various left-wing groups to destroy them, notoriously the Black Panther Party, which they just wiped out.
Well, I mean, isn't that a product of the either you're with us or you're against us mentality so memorably articulated by George Bush?
Yes. But if I may continue, the U.S. government never proved its case against Osama bin Laden. Simply stating that Osama bin Laden conducted the September 11th terrorist attacks for 10 years running does not make it a fact. And in fact, curiously, Osama bin Laden denied being involved in those attacks days after they occurred. And you might say, well, he's a terrorist, so he might be a liar. But on the other hand, a terrorist wants people to know that he is responsible for an attack. That's kind of how terrorism works. So the U.S. government should make its case. If it can make its case, if it's so easy to make the case, that Osama bin Laden committed the September 11th terrorist attacks, then it should be easy to make that case in a court of law. And routinely, as we know, that in Iraq, none of those people in Iraq were involved in attacking America. So
right.
The attack on Iraq had nothing to do with self-defense. If the U.S. is defending its borders, then fine. That's what an army is for. I live close to Canada. I certainly want the U.S. Army here to protect me from the Canadians. but the U.S., of course, has not engaged in a war of self-defense. I'm not sure when, maybe since the War of 1812.
Well, actually, since you mentioned Osama bin Laden and the history that, you know, goes with him, I read a very interesting article in The Guardian. It was published on May 3rd, and it talks about, you know, the fact that for 10 years, Osama bin Laden filled a gap left by the Soviet Union, and it's wondering who will be the baddie now. We're just going to read out bits of it that are relevant to our discussion, okay? And then we'll ask you to respond.
Here's an extract from that article. Neoconservative politicians who had last tasted real power under President Reagan during the Cold War took the few known facts about bin Laden and Zahiri and fitted them to the template they knew so well, an evil enemy with sleeper cells and tentacles throughout the world whose sole aim was the destruction of Western civilization. Al-Qaeda became the new Soviet Union, and in the process, bin Laden became a demonic, terrifyingly powerful figure brooding in a cave while he controlled and directed the Al-Qaeda network throughout the world. In this way, a serious but manageable terrorist threat became grossly exaggerated. And that's an extract from the Guardian article of May 3rd.
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. It's not unlike the nemesis of Big Brother in 1984, you know, this mysterious figure. And it was lampooned, I think, quite well by Michael Moore in his documentary Fahrenheit 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if these things are indeed the case, how is it that the international community has, shall we say, been hoodwinked, as you might put it, by the United States? And why have so many lives been lost? People have gone to war. What has really led to this state?
What led to the state is people take Americans at their word. For example, in 2001, after the attacks, I was living in Oxford, England. And I remember speaking with an English girl about how there isn't a justification for attacking Afghanistan. And the girl's response to me was, well, if they didn't have a justification for it, they wouldn't be doing it. Like she had assumed that they must have some reason. And again, later that year, when I mentioned the move that was being discussed against Iraq, an Englishman told me again that they must have more on Saddam Hussein than merely that Mohammed Atta, one of the alleged 9/11 hijackers, met with someone in the Iraqi security agency. This guy that I was speaking to thought that maybe Mohammed Atta must have met with Saddam Hussein himself. And I told them, no, that's not even what's being alleged. And regardless, the checks have debunked this story.
Yes, I mean,
but this is the idea that people assume that America takes these actions, and then they must have their reasons. Even Barack Obama himself, in his famous quote-unquote anti-war speech before he was elected president, the one which got all the liberals in America excited about his candidacy, he concedes that. He didn't know what decision he would reach with respect to Iraq because he didn't have the intelligence that the White House had. So that is the problem, that people simply assume that if the president says it, it must be so.
Yes, this is true. I mean, the U.S. is in a position of, you know, hegemony, and it seems to enjoy a huge credibility anything it says must be true, as you said, and very few of us unfortunately question it. I think that in other parts of the world perhaps it's questioned more, But for instance, we were talking about Al-Qaeda, or the Guardian article was referring to the Al-Qaeda network being a kind of chimera, you know, and a creation almost, or an exaggeration. And yet, you know, you'll turn the news on here and hear the reporters talking about Al-Qaeda without critically examining whether this is actually an organization that is functional and exists. In fact, in the last few years, we haven't heard very much about Al-Qaeda or Bin Laden. So how, and you know, there have been all sorts of other developments in the world, which especially in the Middle East, with the overthrow of certain presidents or heads of state, dictators, that the U.S. was very friendly with and didn't have a problem with. But the media very often just takes the word, as you say, of the U.S., of CNN and BBC and other such media networks.
Yes, they do. I personally think the fact that there has not been a second devastating attack like 9/11 mm-hmm. is kind of evidence that this will sound like a crazy statement, but it's evidence that there isn't a terrorist threat. But even if there were one, the way to deal with it is not by starting wars that kill innocent civilians en masse. In fact, if anything, common sense tells you that that creates more terrorists. Somehow I don't think that Gaddafi's relatives are less likely to want revenge now that some children have been killed by U.S., or if you prefer, NATO, the mm-hmm. fig leaf of NATO, mm-hmm. NATO bombs.
So what is the way to deal with terrorism?
If you want to see how far we've fallen, America has become, in my view, a country of monsters, where we routinely now see even heroes in action movies summarily executing the bad guy. They don't bring him to trial, they just shoot him, even when the bad guy is unarmed.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because, in fact, I've been thinking that the way in which Bin Laden, if it was Bin Laden, was executed, is so reminiscent of how the Jamaican police operate. And I was thinking, you know, wondering whether we had loaned Renito Adams to the Navy SEALs or something, you know. Here they don't ask questions very often, they just shoot and kill. But the U.S. claims to be a far more, quote-unquote, civilized nation. So why do you think that they could not have taken, or why did they not take Bin Laden alive?
Because they didn't want to. In America, it is considered acceptable to shoot the quote-unquote bad guy. I think it is, it's not a shallow statement to say that Hollywood has had an impact on America. Of course, there's a feedback loop as well. In the movies, you always know that the bad guy did it, because there's a scene where the bad guy commits the crime. And so now we use this language of good guys and bad guys. You'll find politicians, intelligence experts, so-called experts, actually using that same Hollywood language. This is a good guy, this is a bad guy. And so naturally, then, since you know the bad guy committed the crime, because he always did in Hollywood movies, then it's okay to shoot him. But more, and I've noticed in the last 10 years, you've seen the good guys not shoot the bad guy when he reaches for a weapon, but summarily execute the bad guy. And so that, I think, is what was influencing the Navy SEALs. Also, of course, they received orders simply to summarily execute Osama bin Laden and whoever else was there, whether they were women or children, to just kill them all. And they'll get away with it. The American police operate in a similar way. I can hardly think of any examples in the last 30 years where a policeman murdered an innocent person and actually was sent to jail and did serious time in jail for it. In fact, almost never do they even spend any time in jail. And so the attitude of the police has leaked into the attitude of soldiers, where they can just kill anyone. If they have a checkpoint, doesn't matter if they blow away a family, no big deal. And this also extends to what they call the blue code of silence, where policemen in America never tell another policeman, even if they're committing horrible crimes. against innocent people.
Let me just stop.
The U.S. government has decided it doesn't matter how many rapes are committed by American soldiers. It doesn't matter how many kill teams murder innocent families, or even accidents. It doesn't matter how many times they accidentally wipe out a family at a checkpoint or drop a bomb on a wedding party. No one is punished.
Yes, okay, Jonathan.
And they don't even think that this hurts their position internationally, hurts their war aims. So it's not even a matter of being a bleeding heart liberal. It's a matter of accomplishing the war aims. But they just do it. So the Navy SEALs knew they could kill anyone in that house, and
but it's
nothing
left
would happen
them,
to
it's
them.
It's left them with a credibility deficit, however.
It has, but you know, if as long as the leaders of France and Germany and England continue to shake hands with the President of the United States, I don't see what the practical impact is. Maybe the people of those countries will look at America more critically.
Yvette, you had a question.
Dr. Farley, so are you saying then that Osama bin Laden is simply an innocent shot down and is not guilty of anything? Is that what you're saying?
Actually, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we have laws. And if we want to say that we're just like the mafia or we're just like the Romans, where we kill whoever we want because we can, then I say fine. But I haven't heard a speech like that coming from an American president. No American president has said, we are strong and we'll kill anyone who gets in our way. They usually talk about democracy and human rights and so forth. So as long as they're going to pretend that that's what they actually believe in, then when you identify a criminal or identify a suspect, you arrest him if you can. You do not summarily execute him. And in Europe, there isn't even a death penalty, so I was quite surprised to hear people like Merkel saying that she's glad Osama bin Laden is dead. If I'm not mistaken, that was her comment.
Right.
You arrest someone now. I'm going to make a statement that's so contentious it will cost me a job here in America. I will say that I want to see the evidence that Osama bin Laden committed this 9/11 terrorist attacks. He's not a U.S. citizen, so he is under no obligation to say, I like America. He's under no. In fact, he has every right to say, I want to attack America. He's not an American. Now, he doesn't have a right to actually kill Americans, and if he has done that, then he can be arrested. He can have a trial, and evidence can be produced showing that he did that, and then he can be sent to jail. If he's actively engaged in a terrorist attack, like he has a bomb attached to an alarm clock, which he's planting near a kindergarten, then I think it might be suitable to shoot him. But we're not in that situation.
Well, one interesting theory that's floating around, and I read this in a commentary by an Indian writer who's... who used to be ambassador to the UN. His name is Srinivasan. And he was saying that, he said when the news flashed about Osama bin Laden being killed by the Navy SEALs, his 8-year-old granddaughter looked up and said, oh, I thought he was dead long ago. So his theory is that Osama probably died long ago. As somebody tweeted, where was the dialysis machine in the house? We didn't see, at least they could have shown us that, you know. But that he may have died long ago and that this is being staged because Obama wants to find a good way to exit from Afghanistan and to do it on, you know, in terms of covering himself with glory after having overseen this magnificent operation which results in the death of enemy number one, public enemy number one, and then he could say, well, now there's no need for the U.S. to stay in Afghanistan anymore and pull out gradually or immediately.
That's as good a theory as any other. I actually was quite surprised to hear that Osama bin Laden was still alive. I thought that he probably died a long time ago.
Right.
And given the changing story coming out of the White House and given the complete improbability of the story that they are telling us anyway, It would not be inconceivable that Osama bin Laden died a long time ago. For some reason, they know this, and then they stage this this fake operation where they conveniently don't have any photographs, they conveniently don't have
a
any body, and they just expect us to take their word for it and not to remember weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this whole...
Or Operation Northwoods.
Yes.
And then we celebrate Obama's is regaled as a hero for a few weeks, and possibly they could use this to pull out of Afghanistan, although I really suspect they won't, because then a lot of companies would lose billions of dollars if they did.
But what, you know, I don't really buy the theory that he was buried at sea because they're afraid that his supporters or his fans will create a shrine out of his burial place, because such fans are probably going to do that with the site where he was killed or supposedly killed anyway. Do you know what I mean? There is the spot where he was killed, which can still be memorialized.
Actually, they turned him into a martyr. So
exactly.
By arresting him and doing what, say, the Peruvians and their corrupt government did with Shining Path and the leader of Shining Path, you know, they put him in a comic book striped prison suit. That probably would have done more to destroy al-Qaeda than turning Osama bin Laden into a martyr. This whole story does not make sense. It's a crazy story. A child wouldn't believe it, but, you know, that's the level of political understanding of Americans, and that's the audience they're playing to primarily.
Well, you're listening to Double Standards on News Talk 93 FM, and we're talking to Dr. Jonathan Farley, who is a professor of computer science at the University of Maine and co-editor of Mathematical Methods in Counterterrorism.
And could you tell us a little more, Jonathan, about mathematical models in counterterrorism? Give us some examples.
Yeah, well, since 2003, I've been trying to establish an institute for mathematical methods in counterterrorism. I actually wanted to start something like this in Jamaica, primarily as a way of drawing all of those dollars from the military-industrial complex that normally I criticize.
Yes.
From the United States, and drawing it to Jamaica and helping to shore up Jamaican math and science. But we all know the story of World War II. I believe that Winston Churchill said that the person who made the single greatest individual contribution toward winning the war for the Allies was a mathematician named Alan Turing. Mathematicians broke codes, but they also developed some of the earliest electronic computers and the theory behind those computers. So that's cryptography. But mathematics comes into play in other ways. When you're dealing with terrorist cells, you want to be able to draw them and determine the best individuals to capture or remove from the cell that will, so you maximize the likelihood that the cell will collapse. And so that's the kind of work that I was doing, but many other people contributed to this Springer-Verlag book, Mathematical Methods in Counterterrorism, and they worked in a variety of different areas, whether it was game theory or graph theories, as I was mentioning. And so there actually are lots of examples. And in Jamaica, there's the head of the National Intelligence Bureau, Kevin Blake, actually used some of the ideas that I developed to help develop crime-fighting tools, not for counterterrorism, but crime-fighting tools right there in Jamaica. So I was quite pleased to see that some of my more theoretical work actually found its way into practical use. A U.S. Air Force officer recently wrote that some of my ideas had, I don't have a direct quote, but they had actually had an impact on decisions made by the Department of Defense in the United States. So I'm a mathematician, normally a pure mathematician. In this one area, I strayed into the real world, which is normally scary for me. But some of these ideas actually wound up being of use in Jamaica. and in the United States.
Well, that's fascinating.
Well, I want to turn now to the way in which this incident has played out in terms of the relationship with Pakistan. What is your thinking on this issue of the United States going in and really overthrowing sort of the sovereignty of Pakistan by launching this operation on their territory?
Yeah, if I were Pakistani, I would be enraged and ashamed that my government allows this. Of course, the government has been allowing the murderous drone attacks by Obama for years, so it has actually not done one of the most basic tasks of a government to protect its citizens. But in this case, it was an outrage. America violated, I'm sure, whatever international law obtains in order to do this. It was a criminal operation. Normally, you can engage in you can cross a border if you're in hot pursuit. This obviously was not an example of being in hot pursuit. So it was criminal. And the Pakistanis actually should be extremely angry. But, you know, I'm sure the relevant government officials have been bought off. And so they probably won't complain except to maybe appease the masses a little bit.
It was ironic that this building that Osama supposedly was resident in for at least the last 5 years, 5 or 6 years, was so close to their military academy.
Yeah, I find that highly suspicious, yes.
Now, just going back to this idea that you put out there, that if it was not then Osama bin Laden responsible for 9/11, 7/7 in London or Madrid and Al-Qaeda, who was responsible?
I have no idea. I wish that the governments of the West had conducted an investigation rather than engage in rhetoric and attack anyone viciously who questions them.
And how might they have pursued an investigation? What sort of manner would something like that have to take?
Oh, I'm not a policeman, so I don't know. But I do know that they did not engage in any such investigation.
No, I'm just going through some of my tweets, you know, from the hours after this happened. And one of them says, I bet Osama bin Laden accidentally hit the add your location button during his last tweet. You know, how did they suddenly sort of zero in on him?
They're not providing us with any information as far as I know, and whatever they give us can't really be trusted. So
another tweet said Pakistani soldiers shifted 2 buffaloes, a cow, and around 150 hens from the compound to an unknown location. Yeah, it's just going to be, I don't know. It's another... you seem to think, Jonathan, that the world will move on and just allow this to the forces concerned to get away with murder, literally.
Oh, yeah, they will.
But, surely, well, I can't believe that.
Well, we saw it with the Bush administration. Obama has decided, even when they admit that they tortured people, not to take any action against them. In fact, one of the architects of the torture policy in the United States, a lawyer named John Yoo, is a professor at one of the most prestigious universities in America, completely unmolested. So these people did get away with it, and they will get away with it. Obama also has continued, by tolerating torture, he becomes complicit in torture, and I believe he actually is still torturing people. Well, not I believe. He does have people detained in Guantanamo, so even if he's not actively torturing them, that in and of itself is a form of maltreatment. And when he leaves office next year, he will be on the board of 50 different corporations. He'll write another book, which will become a bestseller, increasing the millions of dollars in his bank account, and everything will be fine.
Yeah, well, that's a depressing scenario. I mean, it is one of many that people are talking about. I just want to read another bit of that article, and this is about Afghanistan. It says, the same article from The Guardian of May 3rd, says, but it is in Afghanistan that the story is really falling apart. We are beginning to realize that this simplification has led to completely unreal fantasies about who we are really fighting. fantasies that only persist because they justify our presence there. For the fundamental problem with this simple story of good versus evil is that it does not permit a proper critical framework that allows you to properly judge not only those you're fighting, but also your allies. America and the coalition invaded Afghanistan with the simple aim of destroying the terror camps and setting up a democracy that would allow the country to be ruled by good people. But in the ensuing decade, they've been tricked, spun around, and deceived by the complex web of vested interests there. And their inability to understand and deal with this has led to the rise of a state crippled by corruption in which it is impossible to know who the quote-unquote good people might be any longer.
Well, America never has wanted democracy because true democratic government would tell them to get out and would say that we control our resources. And spinning another conspiracy theory, of course, many people, but few in the United States, know that Gaddafi wanted more control over the oil, had discussed nationalization just in the last couple of years, and in December last year talked about developing an African army in large part to defend Africa's natural resources. And so, of course, that is the time to attack him, and he'll be replaced by either by total chaos, which enables the West either to steal the resources without resistance, or to drive up the gas prices, which suits either way, it suits them fine. So we've seen that played out again and again and again. For some reason, people fall for the American rhetoric. But I want to return to another point that I was getting at earlier about how far we have fallen and why America has become a nation of monsters, a nation of people who accept torture as being okay, as we see in the television show 24, where they were torturing people every week, I guess. And as I mentioned before, cases where the hero executes an unarmed villain. But when Margaret Thatcher went after some IRA members in Gibraltar and they were killed by members of the SAS, there was an outcry because even though these were terrorists engaged in terrorist operations, the fact that she could know where they were and the mission was to just kill them, that still offended our sensibilities, but not now.
So what do you think has changed?
I think there's been this slow brutalization of our consciences, where it's just become more and more acceptable to torture people, to kill unarmed enemies, bad guys, there haven't been enough people to speak out against it.
In the name of national
America,
security.
Two of the leading civil rights leaders are Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. Jesse Jackson actually was an aide of Martin Luther King. And both of them commended the recent execution of an unknown party that they're calling Osama bin Laden. These are both clergymen celebrating, not just noting, but celebrating the assassination operation. So that is the problem, that the people who are supposed to be moral leaders are the opposite.
Well, that's a very bleak vision, Jonathan. Not sure that I agree with everything you've said, but I do find that we need to hear more opinions like this, because we're only otherwise being bombarded with the mass media view of things, which is, of course, the American view of things.
Well, Dr. Farley, thank you very much for joining us on Double Standards. Thank you for talking with us.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Sure. Bye-bye.
And
bye.
That was Dr. Jonathan Farley, a professor of computer science at the University of Maine and co-editor of Mathematical Methods in Counterterrorism, who joined us on Double Standards as we spoke about the questions raised by the killing of Osama bin Laden. You're listening to Double Standards. Well, Annie, there's little doubt that the killing of Osama bin Laden and all the things that have emanated from that has really dominated the news internationally since it happened. And it is obviously not going to go away because it's raising a lot of questions.
No, it almost knocked the royal wedding off, didn't it?
Well, I think
had it happened 2 days earlier,
No one would have been talking about the dress, which I thought was actually, not that I know anything about dresses, but I thought it was quite nice. But Osama bin Laden, the killing, we have heard people suggesting that this was a rightful killing. There's been celebrations. And then there has been a counter view that has been expressed, concern about the fact that why was he killed and not taken captured, and where is the evidence? And of course, views like Dr. Jonathan Farley, which first came to light on the BBC
World Have Your Say program, I think from 2 or 3 days ago. And they were just canvassing opinion around the world, and Farley happened to be one of them. I knew Farley when he was here at the University of the West Indies, Mona, I think between 2004 and 2006, maybe, or around the mid-noughties. And I just thought that, you know, as contentious as his views are, you know, he does have some very strong views on the United States' role, on Obama, etc., and that it might be worth, even though we're not used to hearing such hard-hitting views, but precisely for that reason, it would be interesting to engage with him.
Well, there are a lot of questions that have been raised both locally and internationally. You've probably seen them on your tweets and on Facebook.
Right.
Persons are congratulating the United States for having killed Osama bin Laden. Others questioning where's the DNA evidence? Why was he buried at sea?
Right.
Interestingly enough, for the new technology idea is, the story of the man in Pakistan who wasn't very far away and was woken up in the middle of the night by all these strange noises and decided to tweet about the different noises and what was going on. And it was only later that he realized that he was
live tweeting.
This sort of international
execution of bin Laden. That's an amazing thing. Yes, people have been tweeting very interesting things. For instance, here's somebody saying, in Osama House, a woman non-combatant, another woman, two combatants. So who were the highly trained SEALs fighting for 40 minutes? And then there was this other one, which I thought was really good, if I could find it.
And of course, much has been made of the fact, as you mentioned earlier, that the compound where he was in was not very far from the military academy in Pakistan. Liken it to being just up the road from up Park Camp or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, one helicopter had to be left on the scene. So the Americans, I understand, blew that helicopter up, and there are persons who are capturing little bits of souvenirs, which are bits of this charred, burnt helicopter.
What I found interesting was that you said that despite, I was actually away in Trinidad when this happened, but you said that despite the earth-shattering news that this was, that our local television media actually did not lead with this story.
No.
Tell us about that.
Well, TVJ definitely didn't lead with it, and it was a few headlines down before it was mentioned. Over on CVM, it was mentioned higher up in their headlines. I wouldn't be precise to say, but it was certainly mentioned much sooner on the other side. TVJ definitely led with a local story emanating, I believe, from a certain poll that has been commissioned.
I see.
By the organization.
That's very funny. Here's the tweet that I was looking for. It's from Aniket Alam in India. And he says, but one crucial bit has not been addressed by any of the know-it-alls yet. Where is / was Osama's dialysis machine?
And this is a reference to the fact that the kidney ailment.
That's right. He supposedly needed to have dialysis several times a week. So all in all, this is something that we're all going to be scratching our heads over for the next so many months. And it's going to be very interesting to watch how the United States handles this debacle, really.
And of course, I think the other thing in all of this is those persons who were very much personally touched by the attack on 9/11, 7/7 in London and also in Madrid, may... What can be said to them? One isn't really saying that this means an end to the possible threat of any kind of action. Some have remarked that it might have brought them closure, and others have said, you know, in a sense, nothing really can. So it's a very difficult one, that killings have just led to killings.
That's right. And I just want to maybe close with another quote from that article, which was the Guardian article of May 3rd, and the author was Adam Curtis. And it's called, "For 10 years, Osama bin Laden filled a gap left by the Soviet Union. Who will be the baddie now?" Here's another interesting point that was made. He says, "But because we and our leaders retreated into a Manichaean fantasy, we understood the new complexities of the real world even less, which meant that we completely ignored what was really going on in the Arab world. As journalists and predator drones searched for the different Al-Qaeda quote-unquote brands across the region, and America propped up dictators who promised to fight the quote-unquote terror network, a whole new generation emerged in the Middle East who wanted to get rid of the dictators. The revolutions that this led to came as a complete shock to the West. We have no idea, really, who the revolutionaries are or what, if any, ideologies are driving them. But it's becoming abundantly clear that they have nothing to do with quote-unquote Al-Qaeda. Yet, ironically, they are achieving one of bin Laden's main goals, to get rid of the quote-unquote near enemy, dictators such as Hosni Mubarak. One of the main functions of politicians and journalists is to simplify the world for us, but there comes a point when, however much they try, the bits of reality, the fragments of events, won't fit into the old frame."
Again, that was an extract from the Guardian article of May 3rd. And you're listening to Double Standards on News Talk 93 with me, Yvette Rowe.
And Annie Paul.